I want to talk about what we didn't get a chance to study, what Jesus said on the eighth day of the Feast of Tabernacles.
Yeah, that was cool.
What?
She was reviewing what Jesus said.
We didn't.
I read it because it looked like it was getting really good.
What did you read?
Like John 8 or right after the play.
Okay, starting in John 8, verse 20, is what he spoke on the eighth day.
Hmm?
Yeah. No, you didn't.
You're really punching your buttons tonight, I tell you. Off your dinner.
The first part where he's speaking of I am the light of the world, he's speaking physically, and I can prove it to you and all that, but he's speaking in the court of women, probably on the porch or on the staircases that lead up, the court of Gentiles and the staircases that lead up to the court of women. On the eighth day, he moves up, and now he's speaking from the court of Israel. And the way we know that is because these words spake Jesus in the treasury, and the treasury was in a particular portion of the temple. And the only ones that were allowed there were priests and biggies in the Jewish world. So now these words spake Jesus in the treasury as he taught in the temple, and no man laid hands on him, for his hour was not yet come. Then said Jesus unto them, I go my way, and you shall seek me, and shall die in your sin. Whither I go, you cannot come. Now if you look at the word, it says die in your sins, plural. And any text, any of the extant texts in the Greek, it's singular, it's sin. You shall die in your sin. Then said the Jews, will he kill himself because he saith, whither I go, you cannot come? And here, what he's doing here is he's starting over here, you know, he started talking about that now people knew he was claiming to be Messiah because of the water and the light. You got that? Remember that? So now he's up there talking to the leaders of Judaism, of Israel, because he's speaking in the treasury. And he's pushing them. He keeps pushing them farther and farther and farther and farther. But I want you to understand that he is at a point where he is trying to antagonize. He is pushing the barriers. He's pushing the horizon to its limit. I mean, a nice Christian boy shouldn't do stuff like that. But he is pushing their buttons. He's pushing every button they have. Then said the Jews, will he kill himself because he saith, whither I go, you cannot come? And he said unto them, you are from beneath, I am from above. You are of this world, I am not of this world. I said therefore unto you that you shall die in your sin, for if you believe not that I am, ye shall die in your sins. It doesn't say I am he, it just says believe that I am. And they knew that was a particular statement regarding the Messiah, because when Moses asked God who he was, and he said, I am. So again, he's now publicly proclaiming that he is the one they have been hoping for.
And this is the first time he's
Now, stop a minute and think about it.
It's pretty ballsy stuff.
Especially
that part about you're all going down. You're all down and I'm up.
He didn't ask him to adopt a philosophy. He didn't ask him to adopt a religion. He didn't ask them to adopt a way of life. He claimed that all of the truth in the universe was centered in him as a person, that nothing outside of him as a being, as an entity, was worth spit. Now, you've got to come to the conclusion that that must mean something to you. The fullness of the Godhead is dwelling bodily within an individual. And he's publicly proclaiming this truth. And what does that have to do with you? Is that something you look at historically and say, oh my God, he had balls? No. It's something you better understand that is being proclaimed right now in the temple, in the same place he was, in you. God isn't asking you to proclaim any form of philosophy, any assemblage of truths, any way of life. He's simply saying to you, I am. But he's saying it to you inside the temple, in you. Yeah, let's see if we can see some more stuff. They said unto him, Who art thou? And Jesus saith unto them, Even that I said unto you from the beginning, I have many things to say and to judge of you, but he that has sent me is true, and I speak to the world those things which I have heard of him. Now the word true there is a word that there's no translation for it in English, there's no translation for it in anything that I'm aware of. Or there's no other word in any other language that I'm aware of. But it means something real that becomes outwardly seen. It means more like the genuine thing, the fully tested phenomena. It's the feeling you'd have if you had a huge uncut diamond, and then you snapped your fingers and it was cut perfectly with all the facets and its brilliance. The thing before, it was still a diamond, but at his word, it's now true, it's genuine, it's the hoped for thing. You got it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's not more, I mean, this word is used throughout the scriptures, and especially in the New Testament, but it's almost, if you don't see it, it'll kitch you, because you'll think, well, I'm telling the truth because, you know, I said such and so. That's not what he's talking about. It's the true, meaning the genuine, fully realized thing. They understood not that he spake to them of the Father. Then said Jesus unto them, When you have lifted up the Son of Man, then shall you know that I am. And I do nothing of myself, or from myself is a better translation, but as my Father hath taught me, I speak these things. And he that sent me is with me. The Father hath not left me alone, for I do always those things that please him. As he spake those words, many believed on him. Now, you, each individually, must come to that same position. He did not have any more than you have. Now that sounds blasphemous to the religious world. He was not empowered with anything more than you have, because as he is in the world, so are we. You must come to the position where the words that you speak are the words that you know are the Father's. That means there is never again two of you. Now, you don't think this is possible. You think this is a fairy tale. You don't think that it's possible to be able to speak and know that the words that you speak are as the oracle of God. And the reason you can't do that is because you've never let your thoughts be tested. You've always kept your thoughts private. You've considered them and calculated your thoughts as if there were two of you.
That's why it's impossible for anybody else to do a hot seat.
Why?
Because that's what happens.
Well, I know, but that's not impossible. I mean, it's only unbelief that causes that position to be there. This isn't optional. This isn't something, you can choose. If you've come into this full counsel of God, then this position has to be your normal state of being. Think about it. And tell me an alternative. There's only one alternative. And that is that you have to continue to believe that you are going to get it right. Why is it that you cannot speak openly without apology, without fear? One reason, because you believe the one lie. You believe that you are separate from life and must in some way rearrange and arrange and meet standards in order to be with that thing called life. This is so basic, so seminal, it covers every arena of your life. I look at you and I think I'm talking Greek here.
No, not at all.
I did an article in the paper today about Halloween, or what things that scare you, and it said that the two big things that people are afraid of is separation and loss of control, and then death, which is the combination of the two. But I just thought, wait a minute, I've heard this before.
That's absolutely true.
Now, I am telling you, I'm begging of you to see that you are never separate and you have never been in control, so quit worrying about it. To simply speak as the oracle of God, and once you begin to see that is the way of life, then you will automatically know that the thoughts are also as the oracle of God. There's only one origin point, and that you can't be separate. Everything else that we are hangs on your obedience to this point. Mm-hmm. Nothing else that we're about makes any difference unless you can see this fundamental, basic position. That number one, you are not separate, and number two, you are never in control. And that your attempts to be in control of your own life, to gain your own desires, are only the Antichrist, or the instead of Christ, operating within that temple. And that must be excised without mercy. Please hear me. You can't continue in your sin. You can't continue wallowing around in that cesspool called calculating and carefulness and arranging the words in your mind so that they will come out right. And being careful that you're not going to hurt somebody's feelings. This he spoke on the last day. This is your last chance. Stop believing the lie that you're in control of anything. You gotta know that by now. The only reason that you're careful with your thoughts, the only reason you do not prophesy, is because you desire the control. That's the evil. Oh, I'm just sitting here thinking about it. No, you're not. You're committing sorcery by rearranging the things in time to come out in such a way that you will look good. What are you doing right now? I said something to you that you've got to have a response to. And there's nothing but silence. The response is going on. The dam, Jesus said very clearly, he said, if you deny me before men, I will deny you before my Father which is in heaven. The word deny there means to dam up. If you dam up now, you will always be denied before the Father. It's not optional. That's what prophecy is about. So nobody has any words. You're sitting there in carefulness, building the dam with your carefulness. You're building it, the walls thicker. You're putting untempered mortar on the walls, carefully considering.
Yeah, that's exactly what we did. That's what I'm doing.
I was reflecting on what I've just in the past week and how true it is of things like Saturday night when I felt like shit and everybody was at Rick's house and I wanted to tell everybody to get the hell out or go home and go to bed, and I didn't do either. And it was like,
well, even we asked you.
Well, but you asked me at 12. It was 12. And then you guys left right after that. But Rick got real mad at me for not saying anything, but I didn't. I mean, you know, and even when I thought, okay, I should, you know, just go home and go to bed, you know, but then I didn't want to do that either, so I just sat there, and I, you know, but
you have to see, Liz, that the reason you did that is you wanted to retain control.
Oh, I mean, like I said, I was reflecting on what you said and how true that was, the fact that all I was doing was, you know, keeping control of the situation, and I was building up a wall. Because the wall was definitely there when everybody left. Rick and I got into a huge fight, and you know, of course, we spent time at IHOP, and then everything was okay. But
you did your time at IHOP.
Yeah, I did my time at IHOP, but you know, it's true.
Yeah, I mean, this whole thing, I guess, it just boils down to unbelief. I mean, pure and simple. If you believe it, you would do it. You would be it. You are it already. But if you don't believe it, and nothing comes out, you're stopped. You just, you know, in your mind and in your mouth. And
that's what I was thinking. This is like, you know, I know this, but I don't know it. If I really knew it, it would be.
I think this would be a real fun place if we all knew that. I mean, even more than it is. You know, mm-hmm. It would be kind of wild.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you understand the alternative to it is, in effect, demon worship, Satan worship? You might as well draw a pentagram and begin becoming an expert in witchcraft.
But when you say that, that doesn't have an emotional connection. I mean, I know that it's true, I can say that intellectually, but I mean, you know what, I mean, I don't Satan worship, it's everything. I mean, you know what I'm saying? And I understand that. It's my whole life. I mean, is that part of being without hope? Is that, I mean, you don't know you're without hope till you do that? I mean,
no, it's part of continuing to try to have control of your life. And you will continue to have control of your life until you see that the having control of your life is directly from the depths of hell. You will stop, finally, I pray, considering your words because you're afraid you're going to hurt somebody's feelings or because you're afraid you won't get what you want? There is not one of you who believes that what you have been doing this entire time of your life has brought anything but misery. Then why would you continue in that frame of reference? Why would you continue in the state of carefulness?
Kill your belief that more carefulness will finally deliver.
Mm-hmm. More carefulness will finally deliver us somehow. If we're just a little more careful or somehow get it a little better somehow.
What do we have to be careful of?
Well, that's the point. The things that you have to be careful of are all of the value systems that you've adopted. Because if you prophesy, none of the value systems can be manifested. You can't continue to have the duality of value systems in your life and speak whatever comes into your mind. They too cannot stand, because what will happen when you begin to speak, the glory of God will fill the temple, and there shall be no human allowed or able to stand in the temple. Just as it was on the day of this eighth day of the Feast of Tabernacles, when the temple was dedicated by Solomon, the Shekinah glory came into the temple and the cloud filled the temple so that no man was able to walk into it even to do anything.
Wild and unusual it is to preach, say whatever's there. In fact, Tylene was talking to some friends the other day, you know, Christian kind of friends. They were just saying, you just don't do that. And I'd forgotten that's the norm. You know, most people, you know, couching words is a nice thing to do, and just no awareness to, and so it becomes ingrained.
What's so weird about that, I know that I already knew this, but it's like this really just came into my mind, and couching the words and the being nice and all that other stuff, really all it does is harbor resentment and harbor it, but where you're going to murder that person anyway.
Yeah.
Well, now let's see how Jesus confronted it. The same issue. Exactly the same issue.
Which one are we in?
Verse 30, as he spake these words, many believed on him, because they recognized, you understand there's a difference between believing on him and believing in him? Believing in him is child's play. Believing on him is flinging yourself over the edge of the cliff, and if he isn't there, you will die, you will be embarrassed, you will constantly be in trouble. You will be killed, you will, whatever it is, whatever you won't have any friends, you won't have any girlfriends, you won't have any boyfriends, you won't have any husbands, you won't have any wives, you won't have any children, you won't have any relatives. That's your fear. Therefore, there you couch the words to try to have the appearance of peace. The Antichrist has one job in life, to say to you, peace, peace, when there is no peace. And then you're confronted with some idiot like me. And he will push every button that you've ever dreamed of having and a whole bunch you never even dreamed of. Because all of a sudden you will be confronted with this incredible truth that he either is resurrected or the whole goddamn thing is worthless. And he's either resurrected in you, location, or the whole damn thing is worthless. And you're just kidding yourselves. As he spake those words, many believed in him. Why? Because they saw. And then, this is the scripture that almost no one sees in this next series. This is also spoken on the eighth day. Now, then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him. He's no longer in the treasury. He's moved on probably into the court of women, or at least on the porch between the court of women and the court of Gentiles.
Followed him out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because he created.
Yeah, you know, that's a small riot. When you read it, It had like stage directions or something. It's always just jammed together. You don't know what he's saying.
Well, that's the purpose of a teacher.
Yeah.
That's great.
Then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him. Now notice he said Jews. You got to understand that the Jew is only those that live in Judah. You understand?
Well, who were the other ones? Who were there from besides the people in Judah?
Oh,
there were people lived all over the world.
From there for the
faith.
All the other Jews from like Macedonia.
I think we can go.
There were Israelis.
Yeah. No, I mean, Jews is such a...
Jews are the people from Judah. So Yehuda.
Well, let me get this right. You could live somewhere else, or you had to live... I mean, you had to live in Judah to be a Jew. You couldn't live somewhere else and still be part
the
of
only, the only ones that were called Jews were the ones from... that were living in the arena called...
So they were the natives and everybody else were tourists.
All right.
Okay, that's what we're trying to figure out.
And the Jews were the ones that were... for the most part against him. The people of the Israeli nation that lived in Galilee or that lived in Babylon or that lived in, you know, all over the place, they didn't care. They
didn't have a problem.
They had a problem with him, but they didn't have a good thing with him either. I mean, it was just, okay, we got another Messiah.
Local color.
The Jews were the ones that were the aristocrats.
The in crowd.
They were the in crowd. They were the ones that, they were either from the tribe of Judah, Benjamin, or Levi, that lived in Jerusalem and in the surrounding areas. Okay? So, when it says, then Jesus said to those Jews which believed on him, this is a particular group. None of the disciples were from Judah. Okay? These were the ones whose leaders have got the death sentence on them, but a lot of them know or think he's Messiah. So they're believing on him. So he now has cut himself off effectively from all the ones that were in the treasury, the leaders of Judah. He's just said, all of you are going to hell. Yeah. I don't care what you do. I don't care about all your little ordinances. I don't care about all your little stuff.
It's over.
It's over. Now he's talking exclusively to a bunch of disciples that believed on him just like you. You got to put yourself in this next section and it'll be meaningless. Every one of you are in the ones that he's talking to now, the ones that believe on him. If you continue in my word, then are you my disciples indeed. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Again, the word true there is that word that's incomprehensible. It means the one, the diamond that comes out of the rock. They answered him, because that then was, the first thing he did, he challenged them. He challenged him by saying, if you believe on him, you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. It's like exactly if I went into a Baptist church and said, unless you pick up this cross, you're going to hell. Because they believed, once saved, the Baptist, once saved, always saved, by the act of saying some stupid word that may be a memorized word in a different language, then you're going to go to heaven. You're going to follow God's plan. Say, pray the sinner's prayer. That's right. Some little formulaic thing. Well, the Jews believed by definition. In other words, as just like the Baptist, if I pray the sinner's prayer, then I am saved, always. The Jews believed the same thing, but their concern was with regard to the fullness of the meaning of freedom. The Jews believed that no matter what outward condition they were in, as long as they were of the seed of Abraham, they were free. Totally free. Now, they lived in a world in which there was no such thing as democracy. Every place they went on the face of the earth, they were in some kind of theocracy.
I was wondering, what does the word free mean? I mean, because we got a bunch of dumb driveways and ideas and stuff.
Their concept of freedom meant something that they had by inherited right. That's what you have to... Doesn't matter what it was. But now look what he did with it.
Their governments were run by kings.
Yeah.
Okay.
They answered him, "We be Abraham's seed, and were never in bondage to any man. How sayest thou, you shall be made free?" Nice, innocent question from Jews who believed on him. You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus answered, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, whosoever committeth sin is the servant of sin." Wait a minute, hey, you're changing the subject. We're talking about Abraham's seed. Now, what, we've got all kinds of sacrifices that deal with sin. Why are you talking about sin? We're talking about freedom. "And the servant abideth not in the house forever, but the son abideth forever." Now what in the hell is he talking about? What are you talking about? What do you mean? We're talking about freedom. He's just said to them, your definition of freedom is the essence of sin, and your ridiculous beliefs have caused you to believe in a system that is only going to have any merit for a very brief time. It's just like somebody that has a bumper sticker that says, "I believe in Jesus." They've got their reward already. It's just like someone who is praying and say, "Okay, now we're going to join hands in a meal in a public restaurant." They've got their reward already. It's like these idiot people in the NFL that, you know, that they put the banners, this idiot, that John 8, whatever, 3:16, our banner, they've got their reward already. They're doing it to be seen of men. They say they're doing it for the other men's benefit. That's wrong. They're doing it to be seen of men. You see people praying in a restaurant, "Okay, now, gather hands, let's pray here." They've got their reward already because their motivation is to be seen of men. Here he's saying, your belief system that you're going to be once saved, always saved, or if you're the seed of Abraham, you're free, you've got your reward already. You understand that? Now he's going to get really rough. "If the Son therefore shall make you free, you shall be free indeed. I know that you say you are Abraham's seed," is what it says in the Greek, "but you seek to kill me, because my word hath no place in you. I speak that which I have seen with my Father, and you do that which you have seen with your father."
Oh, wow.
This is to people that believe on him. These are the ones, they were the disciples that he just fed. He fed 5,000 of them. He healed many of their sick. Cast out demons from them. "They answered and said unto him, Abraham is our father." They're starting to get a little nervous now. "Jesus saith unto them, If you were Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham. But now you seek to kill me, a man that hath told you the truth, which I have heard of God. This did not Abraham. You do the deeds of your father." Now, these guys are the ones that believe on him. They're not seeking to kill him.
But they still don't get it either.
They don't get it. But there are now two death penalties issued on him by the Sanhedrin. Both of them for healing a person on the Sabbath. Number one, and the other for claiming to be Messiah. All right, now let's see what he does. "You do the deeds of your father." Now they're really getting nervous. "Then said they to him, We be not born of fornication. We have one father, even God. And Jesus said unto them, If God were your father, you would love me. For I proceedeth forth and came from God, neither came I of myself, but he sent me. Why do you not understand my speech, even because you cannot hear my word?" I mean, this is people that say they believe on him. You are of your father, the devil. And the desires... I'm going to targum this because it's extremely important you hear it. You are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you will to do. Not that you will do, it's that you will to do. No matter what it is that you will to do, the act is that you cannot be anything other than you are. Therefore, the act of willing or desiring to do that thing proves that you're the act of your father, the devil, because the Son of God operates only in abandonment. You understand?
Yeah.
You really understand?
Mm-hmm.
You understand? He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth. Now, what is it? Doesn't mean he went out and oozing people, as we see after the flesh. To be a murderer meant that he desecrated the holy place, the holy thing. That was the idea of murder. And abode not in the truth, because there's no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh from himself, is what it's saying, instead of his own. For he is always a liar and the father of it. That means that it's not possible for him to speak anything other than a lie. Therefore, it's not possible for you in your calculation to speak anything other than a lie. Why? Because it's not the full truth. Anything less than the full truth is a lie. Because you speak, because as long as you're playing that game with your mind, you can never leave time. You understand that? And if you can never leave time in your thought process, you will worship things in time. Mm-hmm. That is the secret of everything in the scriptures about redeeming the time. There is no way that you can even understand eternity until you abandon yourself. Because otherwise you will simply be trying to improve your lot in time. Am I communicating at all?
Yeah.
If you are trying to improve your condition in time, you might as well burn this book and throw it away.
In any time or anything you will to do is obviously by definition trying to improve your lot in time.
I remember actually a minute ago, when you're talking about the field of prayer and public and all that, part of me said, well, what if they're sincere? You know, what if they really mean it? What if they're doing it for the right reason?
You talk about sincerity. They took 46 years to build this temple. They gave everything they owned to build this temple. They prayed, they fasted 3 times every week. They studied the law constantly from their earliest childhood. God doesn't give a goddamn about sincerity. Sincerity is simply physical manifestation attempts to have your own righteousness. And that's why I said sincerity is like sucking on a menstrual rag in the spirit.
Well, it's like what he's saying, you know, the concept of two families, two fathers, and you're of your father the devil. You're in the wrong family, period.
Well, hear me. None of you really understand it, apparently, but we are like, the human race is like sperm cells. It can talk and think and will. God doesn't give a damn about sperm cells, just like he doesn't care about And if you take and decide, I want to live by one point of this, you're subject to all of it. And that's because that means you haven't yet seen the mystery and you haven't entered the New Jerusalem. There is nothing more radical on the face of the universe. There's nothing possible to be more radical on the face of the universe than the doctrine that you've been delivered into.
And sincerity doesn't mean shit.
Nothing.
Usually hard preaching really makes me feel lighted and freedom.
Because you have a stake.
I dig it. I always leave here after Rick, and Rick's always the most intense nights. Unless I'm just totally not understanding, I'm like skipping down the street, and Rick's looking at me like, why are you skipping down the street?
he's saying this. Talk about sincerity. I mean, he's saying this to the sincerest of the sincere. I mean, all of these folks here had not only done all the right stuff according to the law, but they believed on him and followed him. And he says, you're of your father the devil. The desires of your father is all you're capable of willing to do.
Hits me home. All the time I was growing up, we'd always hold hands and pray at meals, and sometimes we did in restaurants, and it's just like, this is, it's good. It's kind of against all the, some of the idolatry.
I mean, do you think these guys, I mean, you got to come to the conclusion sometime in your life that the only way that you're going to understand these things is to empathize, to be there. And you got to also understand that there is no one in history that has ever believed in a false God. There's no one in history that has ever believed in a false value system. There's no one in history that ever believed in a false philosophy. There's no one in history that ever believed in illogical logic. Your concepts of who God is right now are all wrong. The evidence that they're all wrong is that you continue to try to protect yourself. This is the eighth day, folks.
I feel like all the concepts or whatever they are, it's like they, I don't know how to describe this, it's like they've just all been fried or something, and like there's just nothing there. I mean, I don't, it's like I'm just totally disoriented.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like all your definitions that you had of what God was, and this fries all your definitions, so really there's nothing for you to hold on to as far as this picture of what God's supposed to be. All it is like blind faith.
What you can hold on to is the hope that, you know, he's in control.
But it's not hope.
Well, I mean, I know, but I'm saying, you know.
But we are.
Yeah, it's what.
John 8, verse, where we stop, 40, we finished. Stop it. Yeah, go to 45. Because I tell you the truth, you believe me not. Which of you convinceth me of sin? If I say the truth, why do you not believe me? He that is of God heareth God's words. You therefore hear them not, because you are not of God. Now, of there means from. You are not from God. Now, again, I mean, you got to believe. He's saying this to the people that said they believed on him. If you go over to John 2 a minute, I want to show you the same kind of thing. John 2, verse 23. Now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover, in the feast day, many believed in his name when they saw the miracles which he did. But Jesus did not commit himself unto them, because he knew all, and needed not that any should testify of man, for he knew what was in man. Do you understand that ever and always that was the position of Christ? The idea that it's a very simple statement. It's the most arrogant statement in the world. He that hears what I say is of God. He that doesn't hear what I say is not of God. Now, do you think I believe that? Isn't that kind of an obscene thing to say then, or to believe? It's the most arrogant possible thing that you can do. I mean, I'd be afraid if I were you.
What makes you think we're not?
Well,
I mean, that's what I feel right now. It's like, well, I mean, what can we do? I mean, you know, I mean, there's nothing. I mean, it's like,
repent is offer and always. Father, forgive me for myself. I turn from myself totally. There's nothing in myself that I bear or that I care to retain. That's the only way you can know the resurrection. And that's what he was doing here on the eighth day. He was pushing the people that believed on him to the ultimate. Now look what else he said. But go back to John 8. Okay, now these are the guys that believed on him a little while ago. Now he says, and they say, then answered the Jews and said unto him, say we not well that thou art a Samaritan and hast a devil? Well, the word Samaritan is a mistranslation. Say thou not that thou art of Samael, Samael, and hast a devil. Samael was the chief demon.
Verse 48.
Say we not well, or isn't it true? Isn't it an obvious truth? That you are a child of Samael and hast a demon or a devil. Jesus answered, I have not a devil, but I honor my Father, and you do dishonor me. And I seek not mine own glory. There is one that seeketh and judgeth. Verily, verily, I say unto you, if a man keep my saying, he shall never see death. Now they really got pissed off. Then said the Jews unto him, now we know that thou hast a devil. Abraham is dead, and the prophets, and thou sayest, if a man keep my saying, he shall never taste death. Art thou greater than our father Abraham, which is dead, and the prophets are dead? Whom makest thou thyself? Jesus answered, if I honor myself, my honor is nothing. It is my Father that honoreth me, of whom you say that he is your God. Yet you have not known him, but I know him. And if I should say I know him not, I shall be a liar like unto you. But I know him and keep his saying. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw and was glad. Then said the Jews unto him, thou art not yet 50 years old, and hast thou seen Abraham? And Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am. Then took they up stones to cast at him.
You the believers?
Mm-hmm. And he was in now, he was, as I said, he was in this porch. It goes between the court of Gentiles and the court of women. And then took they up stones to cast at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by. Now the reason is, I mean, this was on the eighth day of the feast, the octave of the feast. There was jillions and jillions of people in the temple. He was teaching or talking to a particular group on Solomon's porch. And when he saw what they were going to do, he just split. You've got to come to this. Every believer has to come to this crisis. Otherwise, you can't proceed any farther. And the crisis is, everything that I thought about God, everything that I thought about Christ, is wrong. Remember, when we studied Abraham? And I told you about the stories about in the Talmud and the Midrash that when Isaac was walking up to Mount Moriah with Abraham, and he kind of suspected that, and he at the point of he knew that he was going to be the sacrifice, that Abraham asked him to climb on the altar and then bind him tightly, that a demon appeared unto Isaac in the form of a young man.
That's what it says in the Talmud. And he essentially said, your old man has lost it. How could a God of justice and mercy require you to die without ever inheriting the promise? And the Talmud says that Isaac didn't see through the demon. And Abraham said, get thee behind me, Satan. And the demon disappeared. Well, the demon appeared as the form of a young man because the demon was Isaac himself after the flesh. And then a demon appeared to, it says, a demon appeared to, in fact, Samael himself, because this was the ultimate crisis, appeared to Abraham and said, you must be mistaken. How can a God of love and truth and mercy require you to sacrifice your only son, the son of the promise? And Abraham saw through the demon in himself and said, get thee behind me, Satan. Well, the demon wasn't some demon possession because it wasn't necessary. It was your natural mind. You understand that at that point there could not have, you could not have been here had the argument, had you, because you would have had the same argument, but you wouldn't have heard the truth. You wouldn't have seen through it because you would have judged after the flesh to say that the God looks like this and does stuff like that. He would never have required you to slay your only son. And if you were, you understand what I'm saying? That's got to give you a hint that your ideas about what you think God's stuff is wrong. Now, the other side of the coin is, what we were going to study in Corinthians is that the love of Christ constraineth us, for we thus judge, that if one died for all, then we are all dead. Now, what that means is that since the cross, the human race has been something other than the human race. It's been totally masquerading. There isn't any truth in it. There isn't any truth in the value systems. Everything in the masquerade has as its goal to show you that you are separate from life and need to take action or do something or get something in order to gain life. That's the basis of all manipulation by all demagogues. It's the basis of all advertising. It's the basis of the success of all radio and television. It's the manipulation to cause you to believe that the purchase or the act or the doing of certain things will cause you to have union. If you didn't believe the lie that you're separate, that in fact the fullness of the Godhead dwells bodily in you, that there is nothing that you need, then none of those things could ever control you again. And therein is the peace that passes understanding. Therein is the rest and the contentment in whatsoever state you find yourself in, knowing that God, as Father, is not going to punish you. It's only when you believe the lie of separation do you fall into this. Amen? That's why Paul said, and I beg of you, I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that rather than do all of that crap, you present yourself as the living sacrifice, which is your highest possible service, that you may prove or test what is that good and that acceptable and that perfect will of God. Unto you it has been given to know the mysteries of the kingdom of God, don't consider it lightly. Before Abraham was, I am. Now, John 9 and 10 also were spoken on the eighth day, and we'll try to cover those Thursday.